Welcome to Two Lit Mamas, the Kid Lit podcast for parents, teachers, and writers, and anyone who loves children's books. I'm Heather Kaufman Peters. I'm the mother of one teenage boy. I'm a preschool teacher and a writer.
And I'm Margie Ozimet, mom to two boys, middle school teacher, homeschooler, and writer. Welcome to Two Lit Mamas podcast, episode 48, just like our age, all three of us. And joining us today for his third year in a row, our very own personal patron saint of pride, Uncle Johnny Petrie. Hello, Johnny.
Hi.
Saint.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride, y'all.
Pride is all year round.
Yes.
We're loud and we're proud. So for those of you that are new to the pod, Johnny has been my BFF since the mid-90s. Oh my God, that sounds like so long ago. That's like saying...
Is that another century?
Right? Like from the 1940s, back when we got out of the war. So we have been BFFs since our Villanova days, way back in the day. And he is the fairy godfather to both of my boys. He is a fellow book nerd. He is a writer of two published YA books. And a font of knowledge, the likes of which one has never seen. And this is how I know when Johnny gets of an advanced age and he will have dementia or memory issues, is that he will no longer be able to quote every show ever seen ever to me. So it's so far so good. He's doing good.
I don't know what's going to happen when I can't quote Golden Girls.
I was just going to say that.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine? Yeah. That's when we're taking you to Shady Pines.
That's when you are a Golden Girl.
It's true.
I
guess I'll just have to consider each episode brand new.
Yes. Then it'll be God, all, you get way. To live it all again.
Well, how Heather's going to do that with Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, for sure.
She'll be doing that.
I don't even need to be old for that. I just need to not watch it for a couple months and everything's new to me again.
Okay. Side note. Did you know there is a new YA series that stars Jessica Fletcher's niece? Solving mysteries.
No, how did I miss that?
Books?
Yeah.
Stop it. See, a font of knowledge, the likes of which you've never seen. I did not lie.
Where's my phone? I got to order that right now.
Did not lie.
I have not heard of that. How did I miss that?
And she really is like connected in the whole thing is her connection to Jessica Fletcher.
Yes. And I think all of these mysteries, at least the first one, takes place in Cabot Cove.
Oh. I love it.
Heather's verklempt. She's literally verklempt.
I can't even talk. I'm so excited. Okay,
she can't finish the podcast right now because she's downloading and ordering the books. I'm sorry. We'll move on with that. Let us know when your credit card goes through. I'm sorry.
Wait, am I supposed to be talking to you guys? I'm gone now. I need to buy.
I went to go buy myself something books. Pretty.
Oh,
that's exciting. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
Thank you, Johnny.
That's what I'm here for.
Oh, always. I had to, and that is what he's here for. Because last weekend I was ordering, because we're going to Turkey, but we got a little villa in Turkey to visit grandma in a couple weeks. And I am getting the boys books. And of course I was like, the little guy, I got him all figured out, but I needed to get a couple. And he somehow has this, like, I should probably read like a Clancy book or something. What's his name? Like a Tom Clancy. And I'm like, you want like man books? And he's like, yeah, I should try. But of course I've never read a Tom Clancy, nor will I before I die. And I had to like immediately say, okay, Uncle Johnny, I need man books with minimal sex and go. And he's like, well, like I read man books, but I mean, really? So I got him. I can't remember what I got him. I did get him some old, I think you said Octopussy, which again, I have a hard time believing there's no sex in that book, but what's his name? James Bond. I got him that one. And
you should get him like Red October in those books. Cause I don't think they have any sex in them. Like,
I mean, not like it's, I mean, he watches like show. I don't know. He's watching Stranger Things, but
I forget what that
I'd prefer not
is.
To. Red October.
Yeah. You can also go for the James Patterson ones. I don't think there's any sex.
I don't think there is either. I think, okay. I mean, maybe in some, but who is it? Who's the character in that Red October? I forget. Because there's a bunch of books about him.
And Jack Reacher?
Jack Ryan.
That's Jack Ryan. Yeah, I don't think, because he's like a family man, and I don't think there's anything inappropriate in those.
Okay. Because we were talking about Jack Reacher, but then one of the dads at soccer said, oh no, that's too much. That might be too much.
There's violence in the Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
Like another 2 years, he'll be fine.
Isn't it funny how we're totally okay with violence, but not sex?
I mean, hello, they play video games. I mean, my dorky kids don't play those kind of video games anymore. They only literally play soccer game on, like they play video FIFA. Games of people. Yes.
Yeah. So for my day job, when I'm calling stores, I'm a sales rep for a comic publisher. And if I'm just calling a store in Canada and I'm talking about something, they're like, how much violence is in it?
I bet.
They're like, oh, not a lot. You know, we can't do a lot. And I'm like, well, you know, and this one has a scene of an unmarried couple in bed. And they're like, we don't care about that. Like literally, and I'll talk to stores. I mean, I'll email stores in the UK or in the EU. And they're like, we don't care about the sex portion of it. We only care about the violence portion of it.
We just don't like your American violence.
Yeah. It's you know, literally a distance of 400 miles. And all of a sudden, they suddenly care. Like when I'm calling Canada and they're like, nah, less violence, more sex.
Give us your gays, keep your guns. Thank you. That should be our new slogan.
Oh my gosh.
Your gays, keep your guns.
The best gay pride I ever went to was in Toronto. The whole city was decked out in rainbow flags, and it was just such a fun parade. It was huge.
I hit a couple prides with Uncle Johnny in New York.
Yes.
I saw things. My favorite was the man next to me. Remember him? That great big guy. He was right next to us. Every man that went by on the float, he would scream, they're my baby daddy. They're my baby daddy.
Oh my God.
I loved him so much. I will never forget him. He will be forever in my memory bank. Yeah. Everybody's got a pride now. Even Plymouth, Massachusetts has a pride. Now stop the presses on that one. Who saw that coming? Those pilgrims are rolling in their grave.
It's the best thing ever. Parade across their graves.
Right. Wave my rainbow flag. Oh, God.
Hey, there's nothing like a day of love.
That's right.
I want to make it a month.
That's or a year of it. How about a year of it? Oh, let's go for
it. Nice. A year of pride. It would be nice.
A year of love.
All right. So we, in honor of pride, of course, we have a fabulous book, a fabulous gay book, right?
Yeah. Should we get started?
Let's get started. That's your line. I took my line. Johnny would yell at me because I'm a line stealer. That's why I was in the design track and not the acting track, because I couldn't follow the script.
It's always the same.
Shut up. Did we tell you this story?
No, I don't know if I know the story.
Go ahead, John.
There was a particular script. I can't remember what it was. I think it was the Dadaist portion of the graduate program. And
it was really hard.
The actors, when the characters didn't leave the scene, they would just say the same. So they knew that everybody was staying online, and they would say like the same, and so-and-so enters, and then so-and-so leaves, and then the same. And we were studying for our comprehensive exams. And Margie, when we were going through the scripts of all of the plays, at one point, Margie just stands up or looks up at us and goes, who is the same? And we were all like, what the hell does that mean? It's not a character. It just means the same characters stay on stage.
I had no clue. Again, that's why I was in the design track. It was hard. I just wanted to draw things.
So now and then, I guess actually, Margie, is our friendship a millennial or is it a Gen Zer? I think it's a millennial.
It's a millennial. It's old.
So now and then during our millennial days, when I finally broke down and got a cell phone and learned how to text, sometimes I'll just text, who is the same?
We graduated from Villanova in 1996, mind you. Yep. We finished in 1996. So that is literally what, almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I still cannot live that down 30 years later.
I mean, college years are the most formative years. I feel like that stuff just stays with you forever.
And I feel like graduate school is so traumatic that you really form like a trauma bond with people.
That's how we met, right?
Yes. Yes. You form a trauma bond with fellow graduate students more than you do with anyone else, because that's like, it's so hard. It's just so hard.
Yeah. Cause there's a lot more at stake. I feel like people look at bachelor degrees, like I may or may not get a job in this. I'm going to carry the debt around for a while. But then when you in graduate school, you're like, this debt is going to stay with me forever. And if I don't do something with this degree, I just wasted $75,000 and I don't know what the hell I'm going to do.
Right. And the workload is so much more intense.
Yeah. And you have to work full time.
And we were doing like a creative degree. So you also mm-hmm. had to like pour your heart into everything you did too.
And then have it massacred by someone in workshop, you know, mm-hmm. you have to pour your soul out and then let someone chop it up, dice it up and spit it back out at you. Yeah.
You couldn't talk. You had to sit there and smile.
Well, we have 4 years now to plan our 30th friendiversary party.
We could have a little, like we should probably go to P-Town, whoop it up.
I love it. They actually have a great bookstore there, or they used to. It's been a long time since I've been there. They had a great bookstore there. Yeah.
I was just there last summer. I was there. Yeah.
That's funny. All of our trips like revolve around bookstores because when I came to see you, we went to
the bookstore. Yeah. Speaking of bookstores, my one task is to go to the bookstore in Turkey in Izmir while we're there because Lynn Kelly's, our very beloved Lynn Kelly's Song for a Whale just came out in Turkish, and she has tasked me with going to find a copy in real life.
Oh, I love that. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. So we're going to, she's our Instagram buddy. So I'm going to look for it. We'll see.
That is such a fantastic book. Oh,
and it's called, cool. They changed the name. It's Mavi Ellie Beige, but it actually would turn, it's like Blue 55 is the name of it.
Oh, so they named it after translate the whale.
To, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Anyway,
well, I'm going to see. I can't wait. I'm going to try to see if I can find a copy in the real deal.
So
I want to see what else is there. I want to see like what middle grade books that we've been talking about has been
translated. You should see if there's some of our other favorite authors that we're stalking. That'd be awesome.
I know we have a lot of, we do stalk a lot, but you know, that's who we are. All right. Let's get started. So for this episode, we took a look at Tim Federle's 2013 book, Better Nate Than Ever. And then we wanted to, as we love to do, we wanted to compare it to the new Disney release. So Disney just made a version of this, as everyone is now doing, putting musicals like Tick, Tick, Boom. And there's been a ton of them lately, like movie versions of musicals. So, of course, Disney wanted to get in on it and they did. Better Nate Than Ever. And they made it into a musical on the Disney Plus. It came out on March 15th of this year. It has a lot of big players in it. Yeah, it has a lot of big name stars and things like that. But I didn't want to watch it until we read the book because I haven't read the book yet. And it's been on my list for a long time. Johnny, had you read the book before?
I had not read the book before. My reading tends to skew more YA.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I count on you guys to give me middle grade books to read.
And that's what we do. We do give everybody our middle grade thoughts. We have a lot of thoughts. That's it.
That are middle grade level.
We like fart jokes and things like that too. Anyway, this one came out in 2015. It's the first of three. After that one, it was 5, 6, 7, Nate, which again, we follow Nate, the main character, Nate Foster, through some perils. And then the last one came out in 2018 and it's Nate Expectation. No word yet if those are going to be followed up with Disney after this or not, but we will see. So anyway, Tim Federle also has some, I think we need to get them. He has a couple of adult cocktail books out. Mm. He has a children's picture book. He was a choreographer for a couple different shows. He's a showrunner, a script supervisor. He did do the adaptation of this Better Nate Than Ever for the Disney film, which I must say, spoiler alert, vastly different. And Better Nate Than Ever is actually based on his own experience. So he wrote this based on his own experience.
Cool.
Yeah, he dropped out of school and out of high school and ran away to audition for Billy Elliot, the musical Billy Elliot back in the day. And this is sort of where he got the impetus for this. Before we bust into Nate, though, and the book, the biggest thing I want to ask, Johnny, what would it have meant? Let's talk about representation. And what would it have meant to you? Because I've known you a really, really long time as we've established this. And I see many Nate things in you. I see many, many things in Nate that I was like, oh, I remember that in Johnny. I remember that in Johnny. I remember so many of these things in Johnny. And what would it have, you know, we're old and we didn't have this kind of representation in books. What would that have meant to you? I mean, I just got to say, like, I know what it does to me to see fat girl representation, thanks to Lizzo. And then as a 50-year-old woman, it is life-changing to me to see fat girl representation now. So what would that have done to you as a kid to see that and knowing that, you know, that you have this sneaking suspicion at 12 or 13 years old that you might be gay?
Yeah. So I wish I could remember which author said this, but they said, if you ever want to demonize a culture, culturally erase them so that there's no reflection of them, because then it's easy to see people not as people. And but growing up in the 70s and 80s, there really wasn't anything. And
no, especially not as a kid, right?
Especially not as a kid. I think it's a little different now with the internet because there is a way to connect. But really, growing up in the 70s and 80s, you're like, oh, I'm the only person. Because then you hit 1981, 1982, and the only representation you get is people dying.
Right.
If you are this, you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing, and I was actually, strangely enough, talking about this with some friends of mine when we were talking about comics, is one of the reasons that I think, especially with my generation, of an attachment to strong women and to female characters in general is not necessarily because you're feeling a different gender identity, but because you're feeling like, oh, boys like girls. And if I want a boy to like me, that must mean that I'm like a girl. And so I think that was why I was never into the Hardy Boys. I was always into Nancy Drew. I was never into Superman. I was always into Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I was never into Hercules. I was always into Xena. And I think that that has a lot to do with it as well. But just being able to see yourself and to not feel alone is life-saving.
That's exactly what I would say about this.
Yeah. It's frightening now, not to get too political, but it's frightening now to see what is happening with books being pulled from library shelves and books being banned and books being taken out of schools. Because really, human beings have much more in common than they do different. And the second you start to see someone as a them and not an us, it's so much easier and so precarious to take people's rights from them. And just from an angry perspective, and you can at me, I'm not really on social media or on Twitter, but you can at me if you want. But when people say things like it's sexualizing children, I am 52. I have come out a lot in my life. I've come out to immediate family, larger family, Margie's kids, my sister's kids. I have never once discussed sex in any of those conversations because there is an entirely different.
It has nothing to do with it.
To discuss sexual orientation than sexual, you know. But instead, let's not ostracize people. Anyway, thus, I'm now stepping off my political soapbox for the day.
Well, I think there's
that's
also
it. That's all we get.
We'll get more. We'll get him back. Don't worry. You know, he's too much like us to ever just like fade into the woodwork. he's got just about as many F's to give as you and I.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway, so I just think that that was really important to note that regardless of what we think of the book moving forward and what our opinions are, and I think our opinions usually sort of sync up and we kind of share a lot of the same opinions, but I just think it's really important that regardless of what we think of it, is that representation is so key. And the fact that we've read a lot of gay books with gay characters, I should say gay characters in a lot of books. And this one was so on the money. I just, you know, having taught theater in middle school and back in the day, this kid was a really great representation and a really honest representation of a certain kind of kid. And I think that it's really important to kind of call that out. So anyway, that's where I want to start. So Heather, give us a little rundown of the story.
Yeah.
Okay. Spoiler alert for those of you, it's not at all the same as the movie.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
All right. So in Better Nate Than Ever by Tim Federle, Nate Foster is an adorable eighth grader. I just want to hug him.
Oh my God. I had such a great picture in my head.
Yes, me too. He loves musical theater more than anything, but he's stuck in Pennsylvania. He has a super jock for a brother who his parents dote on. His parents are pretty dysfunctional. It's
hot mess express.
Yeah, quite questionable whether they're going to stay married. Crazy stuff happens. Thankfully, he has a BFF, Libby, who keeps him sane, even if we're not sure if Libby may or may not be in love with him, but, you know, she's...
But Libby's definitely in love with his brother, which is...
Yeah.
But that's perfect, right?
Hilarious, yes. But Nate doesn't get the lead in his school's musical at the beginning, which is kind of disappointing, which I think is also kind of funny because... we're in Nate's head through the whole story. So you're never quite sure if he's really talented or if he just is super into it or what, you know, because he doesn't get that lead in the musical. So you're kind of wondering what his abilities are, which makes it a fun ride, you know, for the rest of the story. But so he doesn't get the lead in his school's musical, which is really disappointing. But then his BFF Libby finds out that there's a casting call for E.T. the musical that's going to be made for Broadway.
What a brilliant idea.
I love it so much. And she and Nate both know that Nate is going to be perfect for this role if he can get to New York to do the audition. So his entire life, he's wanted to star in a Broadway show. These two kids are all about acting, Broadway. It's what they spend all their time talking about. But of course, that can't happen if he's stuck in Janksburg, Pennsylvania. Best name for a town ever.
Right?
Love it so much. Libby and Nate hatch a plan that involves taking a midnight bus from Pittsburgh to Port Authority, a mad dash through Manhattan, a white lie or two, although pretty big white lies. He says he's 21, which I thought was hysterical.
And he's just short for his age.
So he tells a few lies to get into the audition. And just when it looks like he's going to get booted out of the room and can't do the audition, he can't because they won't let him do an audition without an adult. The coolest estranged auntie saves the day because, of course, aunties are the best. Aunties and uncles, of course. So, but then, of course, there's a whole crazy backstory with the auntie that comes out, which was really fun, too. So that's sort of the gist of how the story goes. There were like so many things that stuck out to me through this whole thing that I just loved and made like all those little details that just made it so much fun. Like how instead of using curse words, they use flop Broadway musicals.
I loved that. And thanks to Johnny, I knew a lot of them that they were talking about.
It was was Murdered Moose. Wasn't that one of them? Because
The Moose Murders.
Oh, the Moose Murders. That's what it was. Oh, that was my favorite one. So they would just throw those in whenever they wanted to say a bad word. I thought that was hilarious. And I also kind of liked how, the musical is E.T. and the story of his crazy adventures almost like paralleled E.T. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of a fun way how they sort of reflected each other.
Did it? I haven't seen E.T. since like, well, probably 30 years ago.
I don't know. Just like the crazy ups and downs. There was just something about it that it made me think of, isn't it Elliot is the main character? Yeah. It just made me think of that so much. It was kind of crazy. And I also loved how they both talk like old ladies because, hello, I totally talk like an old lady and people make fun of me all the time. But when his best friend Libby said, I'll be back in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. And I was like, yes, Libby, that's right. You will be. I thought that was brilliant. But, you know, one thing I kind of wanted to talk about, too, especially now that we got Johnny here, is I thought that like I said, we're in Nate's head the whole time, so we're from his perspective, but there was kind of a lot of violence and negative, you know, energy and language thrown at Nate throughout his school career and, of course, on this crazy adventure he goes on. And it's handled like all things are handled in middle grade books, very kind of matter of fact, like it's just laid out. We don't get, is this good? Is this bad? But we're inside Nate's head, so we kind of get to see him either brush things off or justify things, but we also see how it affects his self-esteem like almost immediately. And that really stayed with me. And that was one of the things that I think about the movie that I felt like that just like the heart of that was just ripped out. It wasn't in the movie, you know, but in the book, it was such an important part of the story. And I don't know if Johnny, you can maybe speak to some of that and how and the way he reacted to things. I thought was really fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because if someone said to me as a child, all of the things that happened to you in like fourth and fifth and sixth grade are going to stay with you until you're well into your late 50s.
I don't think they leave even then, unfortunately.
No, I would be like, oh, wait, you mean I'm still going to need therapy for something that happened 40 years ago? How is that possible? Mm-hmm. It's just this very strange thing. And what I do like about it is the fact that it's matter of fact, because it's like these things happen and there's not a moralizing about it. It doesn't make the kids who are bullies, even the adults who are bullies, but the kids who are bullies are not all terrible and have no redeeming qualities whatsoever. It's like, this is what we do to each other when we, again, circling back to what we were talking about earlier, when we separate us versus them. Mm-hmm. And I think as people see this, and I one of the things that I really liked about this, and we'll get into the movie in a hot minute, opinions about
that. Two shakes of a lamb's tail.
But what I like about this is Nate is undecided about his sexual orientation.
And it's very clear.
And I shouldn't say undecided. He's unsure of his sexual mm-hmm. orientation, which I think is interesting because I think there's a lot of, I mean, there were kids when I was in dance class, there were boys who were a little bit older than me who were in dance class. And I'm sure they probably, you know, I think I probably knew I was gay. I don't know what they thought. I'm not inside anybody's head, thank goodness. But I think for kids who are straight and into musical theater, and, you know, maybe sometimes kids hold, you know, especially young boys hold back from that because they think, oh, does this make me gay? And it's like, no, it doesn't. I know I've been in dance class with a lot of straight dancers who were like, I love dance class because I am the only straight guy and I get to hang out with all of these girls and I have no competition and it's amazing.
I thought it was so well handled. It was like, it was the Alex Gino did the same thing. Mm-hmm. They did the same thing in, what was the name of that one? George.
Mm-hmm.
They made this character that was very sort of fluid and they were not sure how they felt about things. And it was very clear to the reader that this character doesn't know and they are too young to know. And I feel like that's exactly what Nate Foster was like. Like, I'm just too young to know. I'm too young to know what I am. And I think that that's the perfect way to do it because, you know, like there were times when my, you know, like when I've known a lot of kids that I've taught and they were like, well, I don't know. And it's sixth, seventh grade. They're like, I think I'm gay. And then 2 days later, like, I'm totally not gay. Like they have no idea. And if they don't know, they don't have to make any choices. They're children. They don't have to choose. Do what you want. You know, like you don't have to put a label on anything when you're that age. The one thing that I loved Nate Foster because he was always talking about like how all, I just had such a great picture in my mind of this sort of little chunky kid. Mm-hmm. And because he was always like, I have to, mm-hmm. my ankles are so fat. I have to wear adult size socks. And I'm, the beginning when he's comparing himself to, what was it? Thomas Buchanan or Jack, what's the prince of the president?
James Madison.
Yes. Oh my God.
The James Madison at his school and how perfect and everything he is. And he's like, I'm not tall like that. I'm not skinny like that. I had a great image as a sort of like awkward little goob that found his niche in musical theater. And that doesn't make, like you said, it doesn't make him gay. It just means like he's a little theater dork and he found his niche. And I think that's what was really perfect. And that's yet another thing that movie really, really missed because mm-hmm. they went for this like perfect little cherubby looking Disney perfect kid. And I was like, where's the fat kid? I want the little chubbo who has this great heart and has this like ambition beyond all ambition. And I love that sort of oblivion. To me, Nate Foster, it was sort of this little short fat kid that had no idea that like a little short fat kid's not going to make it on Broadway because he could do it. And which is exactly what's so beautiful about middle grade, that you mm-hmm. don't have those boundaries sort of put
you
on.
You don't have those fears in the back of your mind telling you can't do something.
You're not good enough. You don't look right. You don't have the right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think
they're
that's
not there yet.
Mm-hmm. I also would like the record to state that if my children ever pulled what Nate Foster did, taking the night bus from Pittsburgh to New York, I would set them on fire after I found them. I just think that from a parental point of view, Nate Foster was a naughty boy.
Well, but let's face it, there's a lot of thing that goes on in middle grade books that from a parental point of view is kind of crazy, you know.
Yeah,
like, that's why the parents are usually not even in the book, you know, because it's just
And shockingly, this book is almost 10 years old. And that was sort of the height of that, sort of the height of living life as an adult without parental supervision in middle grade books was like that, you know, that was the heyday.
We've talked about this before, about how these kind of books let kids explore that adventure without actually physically doing it. So, you know, it lets them have that fantasy of it.
Yeah, I'm also pretty sure your kids probably, if they decided to do it, would go into your phone and get my number and be like, I need you to come pick me up.
You know that's true.
They would.
You know that.
Yes.
You know that's true. They'd be like, Uncle Johnny, she's nuts. It's time. We're moving. We can't take it anymore. Yeah. I do want to say, though, last night, just for the record, we have that, you know, budding teenager thing we're trying to figure out. And his friends popped by and wanted him to go swimming. And I said, well, I don't know. What time will you be back? I have to teach, blah, blah, blah. And his father lost it. And he was like, it's the middle of the night. You are not going out. To which we could only reply, it's 7:30. It was literally 7:30. We are learning a lot about raising a teenager right now.
Maybe he meant it's the middle of the night in the UK.
It was in 7:30.
So, and then when we finally pointed out, he could not stop laughing at the absurdity that he has in fact turned into his father. So there's that. There's that. So.
Teenagers bring that out in you.
Oh, they bring out the worst in you. Right.
For sure.
Speaking of which, a huge plot point that I thought was horribly missed in the movie is Nate's mother's drinking problem. Mm-hmm. That was a great part of the book that was so important and added layers and layers and layers to the characterization and everything we knew. And nothing happened like that in Disney. Like they didn't talk about any of the good stuff. I thought that the estrangement between his mother and his aunt was a great story.
So
I thought that like, just Libby's mom dying of cancer, you know, being a very ill with cancer, huge plot point. Like that was huge. Didn't even have that. Libby was wealthy and lived in a giant house, had no family problems when we go to Disney. Disney ruins the world. I just want to say it. Let it go on the record.
Well, and even the interesting bullying that Nate deals with in the book is like non-existent in the movie. And in fact, he ends up slapping the kid who's bullying him. And I'm like, well, that wasn't the way it went down in the book. But so
there
anyway,
was a rawness and a realness to the book.
Yes.
And I listened to it. I read parts of it, but I listened to the majority of it and the author read it. So the cadence and the characterization was so spot on. Mm-hmm. And then to watch the movie, like I left this book and I was just like on a high. I was
Me
like,
too.
Oh, Nate, I'll see you soon,
you.
Girl. Yes. It was so great. And then to see like what a disappointment the movie was. So let's talk about the movie in comparison. And this is a movie by the same name, Better Nate Than Ever. It just came out on Disney Plus in March. I think it's universal. We all hated it. Am I wrong?
I didn't hate it. But I am good at separating.
It was in no way the same story, really.
Yes. So I didn't hate it.
So you look at it from these are two separate projects.
Well, it's like, because I saw the movie first before I read
it. Oh, okay.
And, is that better, maybe?
Well, I think when I read the book, I was like, one of the things that struck me was like, oh, this is so much more sophisticated than when I was in middle school reading middle school books.
And raw, you know, more raw too, which I thought, honest.
Yeah, but I was like, of course they're going to make it a Disney musical because it's on Disney Plus. So it didn't bother me that it was changed from E.T. to Lilo and Stitch. And of course they're not going to have any real bullying in it because they don't want to glamorize that. And of course they don't, you know, of course they wouldn't have the alcohol addiction in it. You know, of course it's going to have a bit more of a less ambiguous ending than the book did. So I was sort of like, okay, I get it. I think my biggest problem, hear me out to any queer people who are listening, hear the whole argument before you don't start to at me in anger. I think the biggest problem was I didn't buy that kid who is so talented didn't get the lead in the musical. And it's kind of like watching Liza Minnelli in Cabaret. You're like, she's brilliant, but she's wrong for it because she's so talented and so wonderful. I can't buy the fact that nobody wants to cast her in anything. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I come back to with his physical appearance. That child's beautiful and perfect, and he's got big blue eyes and he's got perfect white skin, and he's, you know, he's very stereotypical. This is what Broadway is of that, you know, of years gone by. Thank God it has changed and we have actual people that black and brown people that have been added to the mix and Asian people and whatever. But from a Disney perspective, it was very totally okay, old school Broadway. He's pretty, he's thin, he's, you know, he's light on his feet, he's got a gorgeous voice. Of course, I agree with you 1000%. Like, who's not gonna, I want Nate, I know this is like dorky, bumbling kid who's, when they ask him for a monologue, he does the same story he did at the train station to try to get them to sell him about how his mother was in the bathroom with diarrhea. And that's why he had to buy the ticket alone. And that's the story that he gives them and uses that as his monologue. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. Although I'm not going to lie, when he did the Designing Women's monologue in the movie, or Designing Women monologue in the movie, I was like, okay, that was pretty good.
That was pretty fun.
Yes. But, and if you ever want to see something really funny, there's actually a video of that monologue being shown at a gay bar in, I think it's in Boston. And it's literally every patron, like they turned off the music.
Everybody knew every word.
Is reciting that. It's hilarious. It I'll see if I can find it and send it to you.
That's so fun. I want to see that.
I feel like that, you know, the point, and this is my takeaway. I felt like the point of Better Nate Than Ever is about like this hardscrabble kid that's giving it a shot, like reaching for the stars. And in the course of him sort of following his dreams, he has to confront the demons that he's had. And that is, you know, his mother, his family issue, his mother, his brother, the bullies. You know, he's got to help Libby kind of figure out her life because she's in a horrible situation where her mother is dying. This kid is still following his dreams in spite of all of these things. And he's also sort of navigating life, the reality of life at the same time. Cut to Disney and they're like, hey, pretty little boy, you want a job? Okay, everything's going to be easy. Not to mention my very favorite part of the entire book is when Nate goes, he's hungry and he goes to the Mexican restaurant to charge his phone and get the free chips. And he keeps saying that his mom's in the bathroom and he's on the phone with Libby at the same time, trying to like navigate the situation. And I just thought everything about that made me love that character so much, where he's getting the free chips and he's like sweet talking the waiter into conning him into more things. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't even in the movie.
Okay. So the book, obviously we're going to say the book is better than the movie pretty much every time. That's just the way it goes. Cause you get so much more nuance, you get so much more backstory, you get so many more layers. I mean, I even felt like Libby in the book was just such a more interesting, intricate character versus Libby in the show. But I will say, as far as representation goes, though, having a movie out there like that with this happy, fun cast where everybody's having a great time, nothing really bad is happening, and it even spins New York in kind of this fun touristy way, like after COVID and all that was kind of fun, which I know that, well, no, this just came out March. Yeah. I don't know. I really did try because at first I was mad when I was watching the show because I was like,
I'm still in that zone. I'm still mad.
But then like halfway through, I'm like, okay, but this has a value, obviously. I mean, young kids watching this, and let's face it, probably more kids will watch the movie than will read the book. That's just the world we live in these days. And so it has value, and it's like this happy, shiny show about a kid who loves Broadway and his, you know, great adventure on Broadway. So I feel like, you know, as far as reaching out to, like we're saying, the kids who aren't jocks or the kids who aren't, you know, the A students or the kids who aren't this or that, you know, this is a good show representing that. And even if, you know, you're questioning whether or not you like boys or girls or whatever at that age, it really, in the movie, definitely none of that even came into any of it, I don't think. I mean, it was just a kid who loved Broadway. So
yeah, I think Disney tends to want to make things aspirational.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily fault them. So Dan Levy, who is the writer and creator of Schitt's Creek, S-C-H-I-T-T-S, just so nobody tries to censor anything here. But he said during an interview, he was like, I will never show a homophobe in my show because I don't want to give breath to that. I don't want anyone to connect or relate to that person in any way.
That's a great point.
And I feel like that's what Disney did, because the relationship between Nate and his brother Anthony is much more adversarial in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much, it's much smoother and much, you know, has a happy ending in the movie. So I think, I just think Disney makes things more aspirational. I also think that books generally tend to be a lot more nuanced, and you can't do everything that they want to do in, mm-hmm. in the movie. I will say, however, the woman who played the director in the movie, actually, I know because she did a part in one of the podcast episodes for the other podcast that I do. So I was like, I know her. How do I know her? And then I looked up her name and I was like, oh, she was an actor in a script that I wrote.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Small world.
I also liked how I did like that the way that the general cast was way more representative of, you know, way more diverse than actually in the book, I think. Like as far as the casting crew on of the musical. And I have to say, my heart got a little, you know, at the end where they had the big happy Disney ending. I had shed a few little tears at the end with the brother.
I but, just think that the parents in the end, though, I was like, what the hell was that?
I know.
What the with the Disney one? Because I literally, full disclosure, just watched this about 20 minutes ago. And I saw the end with the, and I was even like, do what you want, Disney, but that was ridiculous. Like, oh, did you run away and not tell us? What the hell? That's not, I mean, no one's going to react that way. There's nothing about that that works.
Well, let's face it, in the movie, though, he was never by himself. So it felt a lot less dangerous, I guess.
Yeah. And I got to say, I loved Aunt Heidi in the book so much because she was very Uncle Johnny that my kids would run into, except we're not estranged. But I really didn't think Lisa Kudrow was the right mark at all. I felt like she was too old to be Aunt Heidi, and she didn't have the funk factor that made her cool. You know,
her apartment
didn't work
cool.
at all. Shucks. She needed to work at Aw Shucks, the oyster bar, to make it work. I mean, that was one thing. Come on, Disney. You should have kept Aw Shucks. It was funny.
That was
and
funny.
Instead, they just put her at a bar mitzvah. Wah, wah.
I understand, although I don't think it was, I understand why they did it, why Tim Federle did it in the movie, but I really loved the character of Freckles in the.
Yeah, me too.
Oh my God, I loved it. I loved everything about it.
I was like, oh, this is okay. This is interesting because, you know, kids don't often see, you know, when you're questioning your sexual orientation, kids don't always see good, healthy representation.
Positive, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just was like, oh, Freckles would be that dude that I would have a, you know, like a seventh grade crush on and be like, why do I feel this way? I don't know why.
Just for those of you that didn't read if you didn't read the book yet, Freckles is a very put together, handsome, brilliant gay man that kind of helps in this sort of getting Nate back home and all that. He's a friend of his aunt.
He's Heidi's roommate.
He's Heidi's roommate and a good friend of hers. And so Nate sort of takes to him because he's a great role model. He's just a nice, cool guy that anyone would want to hang around. I would hang around with him. Mm-hmm. But you know me, I'll go to Fire Island with anybody that asks me. Anybody else have anything to say on it? Should we wrap that part up? I gotta say, read that book. If you have a kid, if you're a teacher that you have a kid and you have a kid that is whacked out of their mind for theater, give them this book. Mm-hmm. If you've got a kid that, you know, is really just a theater nut, give them this book, or somebody's just looking for a good read. It's a great read. It's a page turner. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I saw the best political cartoon this morning, and it was a picture of like a little girl being read a story by someone. And she was like, no, I don't need a story to explain away the world. I just want a story where I can escape. And this is exactly what this was. Yes. In a way it did explain away the world, but mostly it was just a great escape, and I loved it. And so much of the things that Nate feels when he goes to New York the first time, I remember feeling exactly the same way when I went to New York the first time. Like all he really, you know, like when you're kind of coming from nowhere and you go to New York the first time, though, all the feelings and all the excitement that he has are so spot on the money.
That's yeah, I think it's a great them. Book for when you don't quite feel like you fit in. For anyone, you know, for theater nerds especially, but for anyone who doesn't feel like That's, you know, oh, sports aren't my thing. This thing that everybody else loves isn't my thing.
It's a great book. It's been on my list for a long time, and I'm so glad I finally read it.
Yeah.
So glad.
All right. We got to move on, right? That wraps up our book chat about Better Nate Than Ever by Tim Federle. And we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with this week's pick six. What will it be?
For this week's pick six, we're each going to share with you two books that made us readers, the book nerds that we are today. So Heather, why don't you go first? You have to choose only two, which Heather is not good at following the rules. So what are the two books that made you a reader?
I really did only choose two this time. I promise. Okay. So I've probably said this a million times on the podcast, but my one book from childhood that stayed with me is A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. And, you know, I love fantasy, and that just like really spoke to my little kid heart. And I've stayed with me, like that story was always in my mind, like growing up. So into adulthood. And then my second book is The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. My mom read that to us when I was a kid, all my siblings and I, and I just loved the adventure story. And I seriously wanted to live in a hobbit hole. I still have life goals of doing that someday. I will do that. But anyway,
you did buy that property, and maybe you can build yourself a hobbit hole.
I seriously have been thinking about how I could do that. I'm no joke. So that obviously stayed with me too.
Well, there's a whole Norwegian method of building. I'll explain it to you. I'll send you a video that you can build your own hobbit hole. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We'll do it together. I'll fly out and do it. We'll build a hobbit hole.
That'd be fun. All right, Johnny, what about you?
So I was not told that I only had to pick two.
I knew you couldn't follow the rules.
I assumed it was a guy. As a child, as a young person, those many years ago, I would probably say Bridge to Terabithia.
Oh my God. Why did you know? Patterson. When are you so depressed?
Because I think because up until that point, I didn't realize that books could be a cathartic thing. And I didn't think books could kind of help you through sadness. You know, books up until that point were happy.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
And then this is going to be tough. But I'm probably going to say Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Because I think there is something, not I think, I know for me, there is something about that book that kind of hits everything. It's got the romantic portion, but it's witty, but it talks about life in another time, and it's also serious, and it's family dynamics and family drama. And I think that there's just something about that that is that's really wonderful. And then the other book that I'm going to say sort of made me explore new things as a reader is Call Me By Your Name by Andre Osiman, which is the best book that I have ever read about the first time that you fall in love. It is, because it's not pretty, it's awkward, and it's uncomfortable, and it hurts, and it's painful. And so I only went with three. I could have gone with another five, but I'm only gonna
That's okay. We'll allow that. Mine are very simple. The first one, I just wanted to give it my first book that really got me into middle grade books and reading middle grade books when I was teaching way back in like 1999 or 2000, when I very first started teaching middle school. One of the students I had was an avid reader, and she was like, no, you need to read these books because then we can talk about them at lunch. Aww. And I was like, well, okay. And one of the first books she gave me was Fever 1793 by Laurie Halsey Anderson, which I just reread again last year with my kids. Such a great book. And that is the book that showed me the brilliance of middle grade lit. And that is that middle grade lit is this world that stands on its own, and there's brilliance. I think it's important for me to point out that while you have chosen The Hobbit and Pride and Prejudice as your books, what really made me, as one might expect, become a reader was actually The Island of the Sequined Love Nun. Yes, you heard that. Island of the Sequined Love Nun. It is one of many. There's a series of books by Christopher Moore, who is probably my all-time favorite writer. And there's like the Stupidest Angel, Coyote Blue, you know, like the Lust Lizard of Melancholy Cove. And one day, for some strange reason, somewhere in my late 20s, early 30s, the covers were amazing. I picked one up, and that was the first time I read a book, and I'm like, oh my God, you could have like zombies and people in a book and comedy, and it's absolutely brilliant, and make it a page turner that I never want to leave. And The Island of the Sequins Love Nun, I read it then. I just reread it again last year, and it's still just as brilliant as ever. And I also learned a lot about Micronesia in that book. So I have to say, that's who I am. I very much fall into that, you know, the avant-garde, the dorky weirdness of me. I can't say that I've ever read Pride and Prejudice, and I've never read The Hobbit. But I also, I'm going to venture a guess that neither one of you have read Island of the Sequins Love Nun. So there you go.
That is
I have
true.
Not read that. I did read Lamb by him, which is pretty freaking brilliant.
And he's got a new one coming out. I can't remember the name of it, but he's got a new one. So Christopher Moore, he's my guy. So that was the one. And I still read everything. He's got zombie books. He's got there's a schizophrenic nudist. I mean, that wield machetes. It's brilliant. It's all the stuff that I love. So
I take it that book's not for kids though, right?
No, no, but I will give it to my children. But like, if you want to understand your mother better, here's a little bit of what happens in her head.
Yes,
I think they know that.
We should also point out Call Me By Your Name is definitely not a children's book.
It's YA, right? Isn't it YA?
I thought it was YA.
It's more.
It's not?
I mean, yes, YA could read it, but I would wait until you're an adult to read it, because I don't think it's going to have the same emotional impact until you've sort of had a few times when you've fallen in love.
Okay.
There's also a very racy scene in there. So just so everybody's aware.
All right, Margie, what's on deck for our next episode?
So we're looking at Adventures at Sea, and I will be reading Ark of Bone by, this is funny, her name is Jenna Yolen, but Yolen. I kept looking for the book by Janet Yellen. I had a terrible time trying to find it. And I was on the library, I was on the Amazon, I was on the bookstore, and I'm like, where is Janet Yellen's book about this whale? Janet Yellen didn't write a book about a whale, but Janet Yolen did. And I got
it. And Janet Yolen is one of my favorite authors. So I might be reading that book too, just because.
Not to be confused with Janet Yellen.
All right.
She has a very different job.
Yes, she does.
Who's the same? It all makes sense now.
The same.
It's all coming together. And what are you reading?
I'm reading Treasure Tracks by S.A. Rodriguez. I'm looking forward to that. Adventures at Sea. That should be fun. So that wraps up this episode of Two Lit Mamas podcast. Thank you so much to the extraordinary Johnny for joining us today.
And Johnny, give us a little plug. Give us some plugs while you're here. What's your podcast?
The podcast is called April is the Cruelest Month, available wherever podcasts are.
Wherever you get your podcasts is how we people say
wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wherever podcasts are, my English teacher in me just broke a little bit. Go on, dangle your participles later.
I'm in my early 300s. I don't understand technology. I'm lucky I know how to use a phone.
But, you mean the kind that you don't have to dial because you still have that in your house?
Believe me, if I could go back to a rotary phone, I totally would do it. I want to say thank you so much for having me. Happy Pride. Pride is all year long. So, you know, don't be afraid of.
Don't be afraid to fly your flag.
Don't be afraid to be you. You know, you don't need to find out who you are. You just need to find out who you aren't.
Ooh, oh,
that's nice.
It's good. I aren't a skinny girl. That's what I know so far. It's thick 30. Thanks, Lizzo. She's my own personal hero right now.
You're gorgeous.
It's thick 30. Okay, I'm ready. Go ahead. That's back to you, Heather.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where are we at? So if you want to join us twice.
No, if you like what you've heard.
Oh, if you like what you've heard.
Get your line right.
Okay.
Cut. Cut.
Stop stepping on her line.
She does it all the time.
If you like what you've heard, leave us a review and share us. We'll love you forever, unless the review is bad. If you want to join us twice a month for Kidlit discussions, Please subscribe to the Two Lit Mamas podcast through any of the places that you get your podcasts. And if you want to find out what's happening in our world, you can follow us on Two Lit Mamas podcast on Instagram, Two Lit Mamas on Facebook, and of course, on our website, twolitmamas.com.
Brilliant. Nice. Thank you. Just
cut it, record it, and use it every time.
That's right.
I like it. I'll take it. And you didn't get cast in those erectile dysfunction commercials, but you had the voice. I don't understand.
They don't let anyone with gay voice do erectile dysfunction.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. That's not good for business.
Oh my goodness. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. You probably got more than you expected this
time. Have a great week and watch out for ED.
Bye.
Have a great week.